Welcome back, everybody. It's Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Suntress here. Man, last night I had a ball talking to two of my favorite people in comics. They are Nicola Scott and Kelly Sue DeConnick. They, of course, did the third volume of Wonder Woman Historia, the Amazon story, volume 3. The collected edition of all three volumes, which includes volume 1 with Phil Jimenez art, volume 2 with Gene Ha art, and finally Nicola's volume 3. That hardcover comes out on June 6th. So we talk about specifically volume 3, but we really get into all three volumes. Both Nick and Kel have great things to say about Gene, and of course Phil, who really designed kind of the look of all three volumes. And as Nicola says, Gene and she had basically followed his blueprint, but also put their own style on it. And as the story was different in each volume, their art reflected it. So we get into that in great detail. Lots of great audience live questions as well. It's wonderful to talk to them about process, because these are two very thoughtful creators. And I'm so glad they're working together on this. I don't think they had ever worked together before. I knew they knew each other. But man, and also, just in general, you'll forgive me, everybody, but you know, you get to know these people, and especially after doing Word Balloon for as long as I have, 18 years, and I've known Kel and Nicola for a good portion of those 18 years. I know I met Nicola in 2006, and I know I met Kelly Sue and Matt in 2006, Matt Fraction, Kelly Sue's husband, and immediately really appreciated all three of them. But given the nature of this conversation, the two of them. So it's always been great getting back with them and seeing them live. And last time I saw Kel live was at Rose City back in 2019. And I saw Matt then too. Nicola, I think the last time I saw her was either New York or San Diego, kind of around that same time, either 2019 or 2018. So, I mean, we've had Zoom conversations, but it's just always so good to see them. And I wish I knew they were all going to be at Rose City this year for Historia. So it's going to be Kelly Sue, Phil, Gene, and Nicola all together in Portland for the Rose City convention later this year. Man, I wish I could go. But regardless, you get the benefit of this conversation. So I've broken it into two parts because it was a two-hour conversation. This is part one with Nicola Scott and Kelly Sue DeConnick talking about Queen Hippolyta and her journey, her hero's journey, in Historia on today's Word Balloon. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by Pulse College. Pulse College has three decades of a proven track record delivering professional industry training courses in audio, music, film, games, and animation. Since 1991, Pulse has received international recognition for both its vocational and practical-driven academic courses. All courses are designed and delivered by experienced industry professionals and offer cutting-edge blends of academic perspectives fused with practical skill sets in the areas of film, music, games, and animation. This, combined with the unique teaching and learning environment of the iconic Windmill Lane Recording Studios, makes world-class industry education attainable. Learners from around the world can join in a variety of short courses offered remotely via Zoom in the fields of sequential art and design, 2D animation, 3D animation, character design, and game environments. For more details, visit pulsecollege.com. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Word Balloon. This is John Suntress with an important plea for 2023. You probably read the headlines. Word Balloon took a sponsorship hit that was pretty significant, and I'm asking you if you've ever been a fan of Word Balloon and considered making a donation through Patreon, a very meager but important subscription. I hope you'll consider it. It's going to be a challenging 2023, and I need your help. So if you like Word Balloon, if you enjoy the content, I'm not going to slow down and keep bringing you some excellent content, but I could really use your help via Patreon, patreon.com/wordballoon. If you can afford the price of a comic book, if you can even afford a dollar a month, it would be greatly appreciated and help the cause to keep Word Balloon going at the level and intensity that I've been doing in the last 4 or 5 years, and bring you a lot more content and a lot of great interviews and interesting things about the pop culture world. Patreon.com /WordBalloon. I could really use your help. Thank you for your attention, your time, and listening to Word Balloon. Word Balloon is brought to you by AlexRossArt.com. Alex has been a longtime sponsor of Word Balloon. I greatly appreciate it. You got to go to his website. You will find tremendous art, from original work, covers, pages, fantastic lithographs, amazing posters. Every price point is covered, and every subject is covered at AlexRossArt.com. You've enjoyed his iconic looks at DC and Marvel, but also great stuff like his wonderful work on the Monkees, Monty Python, so many other great pop culture things that Alex has put his fingerprints on. His wonderful Flash Gordon poster that evokes the fantastic Dino De Laurentiis Sam Jones movie. Recently, Alex did things like the timeless Marvel covers featuring great solo shots of all your favorite Marvel heroes, and of course his Fantastic Four full circle graphic novel, still available. All waiting for you now at AlexRossArt.com. Welcome back, everybody. Time again for Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Sutris here. Two of my favorites that always come back whenever I put my version of the bat signal up. Here's Nicola Scott and Kelly Sue DeConnick. Welcome back, ladies.
Hey, John.
Hello.
This has been great. Kel, you've been incredibly kind. We've had the opportunity to look back at every volume of Wonder Woman Historia, and I've got the covers here to prove it. Volume 1 with Phil Jimenez, Volume 2 with Gene Ha, and now we're on Volume 3 with Nicola Scott art. Fantastic.
And the hardcover.
What's that?
Bringing it home.
Bringing it home. And the hardcover coming out in 2 weeks, the 6th, June 6th, everybody.
Yeah. Oh, shit, so, that's soon.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. And are they using the Phil cover for the cover, Kel?
They're using the Phil cover for the main cover, and then there's a jam piece that is the variant for the stores.
Oh, that's great. I didn't see that one yet. Fantastic.
I would have been wise to have my copy with me.
Oh, yeah, well. I don't have mine either.
No worries. Nick, how did that work? Like, did they composite three separate images, or was it a jam piece?
It was a composite.
Okay.
It was definitely a composite. So as it was pitched to me, and I was like, oh, that's a lot of content to fit in one cover. But Phil kind of designed the idea. He was sort of having the center a vertical panel with Hippolyta, baby Diana, and Hera in the background. And on one side, Jean was doing all the goddesses. And on my side, I did all of the Amazon queens.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
We'll look at your interiors and then look at some of the pantheon of, there's the pantheon of goddesses, and then there are the members of the seventh. What is it, Kel? The seventh what?
Seventh tribe.
The seventh tribe, indeed.
Yeah.
And you'll forgive me, women, because my connections are a lot of old sword and sandal stuff, but I got a real Spartacus vibe from volume 3, both in gathering the seventh tribe and just as they mount their attack, and even some of the ways they entertain each other when they're not fighting and stuff. It reminded me of the Kubrick film and Tony Curtis and, of course, Kirk Douglas. I don't know, Kel, was that in your mind at all when you were writing this or no?
No, but I'll take it.
Classic.
Yeah.
That's true. There you go. Excellent.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely like you said, apologize for sword and sandal, but I mean, it's not, we didn't like tell it as though it took place on Wall Street in the 80s, you know? I mean, it's still ancient Greece. It's, there are both swords and sandals.
Indeed. that's the genre. Absolutely, man. I grew up on Saturdays with the Sons of Hercules, all the Italian Spartacus knockoffs that came in its wake and everything from the 60s. Hilarious stuff now. So, absolutely. Nick,
I was definitely thinking of Steve Reeves when I was drawing Hercules.
There you go.
Hercules.
Yes. Hey, and by the way,
I couldn't not, like, not that I was, you know, referencing him at all, but couldn't think of him.
Absolutely. Well, and truly great to see the Seven Tribe take, you know, I you'll forgive me, being Greek, it was like, oh, Hercules is cool, you know, and I've always Marvel or whatever in the mythology and stuff, but it's all right. I've grown up and read more stories, and it's like, yeah, Hercules could be an asshole. So it's like, all right, take him down, women, by all means.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely an asshole.
Yeah, well, and there's the, I mean, we just wanted to fuck with the whole, you know, Hippolyta's girdle thing.
So, yeah.
Like, I mean, it's a rape metaphor, and.
Wow, yeah, I see it now, yes, yes,
and, of course. And so just to have the idea that, you know, the mission statement from page one, book one, that, like, there are multiple versions of these stories, and, you know, it's not for us to declare which one is true, but here's one you haven't heard before.
Yep.
And you want to know how Heracles came to deliver Hippolyta's girdle to Zeus? Maybe it didn't go down the way you were told, you know?
Indeed.
So.
I love the metaphor too, and we'll show the visual, but I love the metaphor of the praying mantis versus the ants.
Yeah. Oh, and it just killed all of that. And all of the battle stuff is just jaw-dropping. That spread is insane.
Yes.
Look at that.
Yes.
And, like, how do you even... That is magic. I don't know how you do that.
That took a while.
I imagine it did.
It took a while. And I think it was kind of... I've forgotten what her name is. But it was the character sort of down the bottom... with the horns on her helmet.
Yeah.
It was kind of getting her suddenly made everybody else make sense, made the space feel three-dimensional.
That's amazing.
Because the first character I drew was Heracles, because he had to sort of cover the spread.
Right.
And I wanted to make sure that I was getting the scale of him right, because that would then tell me how big all the Amazons were.
Right.
In relation to him, not necessarily in relation to each other. And so sort of getting his general position right.
Yeah.
And then sort of populating around him all the characters. But it was, yes, it was that Amazon down the bottom with the spiral horns.
Orana, I think.
Orana. Yes, that's her. That's definitely her. Yeah, getting her in the right position was suddenly like, oh, okay, I can now see the full three dimension of the space that I'm trying to fill, like how high off the ground he is, you know, how much space is in between her and his leg and then his torso and, you know, who can I fit in that space? And, you know, it sort of suddenly became... something that I could properly see in my head. And then it just became about, okay, how do I feel this? Because it's got to feel not like, you know, a couple of Amazons coming in and doing the job. It's got to feel like they're all just
right, piling
on without damaging each other. They're all sort of skilled enough to get in and duck and weave between each other and each other's weapons to sort of get in and get their own pound of flesh.
I like that they're animals. Take part two.
Oh yeah, that was a lot of fun. I remember waking up in the middle of the night. I hadn't yet drawn the first sort of actual battle with the army of men, mm-hmm. and it's sort of I had already sort of thought in my head from how the scripting felt in the script. That battle seemed kind of like a silent battle because it was being juxtaposed to a very visceral fight that Hera and Zeus were having.
Right.
On Mount Olympus. Like that was where the dialogue and the orchestral sort of anything would be coming from, and that the battle itself was silent until a particular moment where it suddenly kicks into gear and it's quite visceral. So it needed to sort of feel a bit sort of not out of time or out of space, but just sort of slightly ephemeral. And so I had sort of decided that I'd do a sort of classic, you know, two armies about, you know, charging at each other kind of thing, you know, great comic book standard, and, you know, Lord of the Rings standard, and all that kind of stuff. And so we're in the middle of the night. I woke up going, the animals, I need all of the birds sweeping in, because there are so many fucking birds.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so many of the goddess-born Amazons come with their sort of animal counterparts. And I had the bears in there and I had some horses in there. But it was like, no, there are all these birds. There are all these sort of like birds of prey that are part of their tribes. They're on the attack as well. So I had to stick them in too, which was a lot of fun.
I love it so much.
Kel, or rather Nick, I wanted to ask you regarding the art. I mean, this is more extreme than the usual DC and Marvel fare. But actually, like you pointed out, the woman in the bottom left with the horns kind of has a hell Norse goddess vibe from Thor. And have you done this kind of, again, sword and sandal kind of genre prior to this?
Only when I've dabbled with Wonder Woman before, you know.
Sure.
Certainly,
well, of course.
When
yes.
Greg and I did year one. My favorite part of that was sort of anything on the island is my favorite sort of arena, because I love all the characters so much. But doing something at this sort of level of detail, absolutely not. And so it was a real treat to sort of be able to venture in and sort of play with the designs that Phil had done for all of these Amazon characters, and all the designs that Jean had done for all the sort of Seventh Tribe characters. Sort of being able to sort of find my way into my version of these characters, which have been designed by one artist and drawn only a couple of times. You know, Phil did these incredible designs and then only got to sort of draw them a couple of times, not even each, you know, some of them he only drew once.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jean got to sort of play with a few of them a bit, and then I got to sort of draw all of them all the time. So it was kind of, it was a really nice, you know, regardless of who was being mentioned in the script or who had dialogue or whatever, but just sort of being really conscious of who's present at the moment or who haven't we seen for a little bit that I need to remind people are there. You know, I just sort of wanted to make sure that all 30 of the sort of goddess-born Amazons were there, plus a number of the ones that Jean had created, plus a bunch of others, and make sure that we were seeing the sort of the density and variety of this population as much as possible, because that was what this volume was about. You know, volume one was sort of so grand in its scale, and volume two was really intimate in its sort of POV, and my volume sort of had to sort of be somewhere in the middle, which, you know, kind of worked out really serendipitously, because I feel like, you know, Phil's art style and Jean's art style is quite sort of different from each other, and somewhere in the middle is actually where I sit reasonably comfortably. So
you are taking that on our first call. When we were talking through the whole thing, and then you were like, so I'm hearing you say that Phil's book is the gods and Jean's book is the mortals and my book is the gods and the mortals. And I was like, yes, that is exactly what I'm saying. Like,
sure I was.
Totally said that.
That's great. I mean, like, were these the three, Kel, from day one that you really wanted to do the books?
No, it was such a, I mean, I wish I had, I would love to say that. I would love to say that, like, in the beginning, I was like, yes, let's do it. You know, we'll have different artists and, you know, but no, I mean, I didn't think it through like that. It was, I wanted Phil to do it, and then it took 4 years to do one.
Yeah.
Which is entirely reasonable when you look at the work, you know.
When, like, you look at the work.
Yeah, like, I get it. And that is not a slight, but he was exhausted, you know? And, like, needed to do something else for a bit. And then I think we made, like, a list. And I think we talked to Nicola about two, but it wouldn't work. It didn't work out.
Schedule-wise or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't, I would love to pretend like it was a whole plan, but it absolutely wasn't. I love all of the, I don't give a shit about, I can curse on this, right?
Of course you can.
Okay.
Thank God.
I don't really, art awards are very silly. And, you know, it's not, it's, I don't want to, you have to be really careful because I don't want to be disrespectful of anyone, nor do I want to poo-poo anyone for whom it matters, you know, like, but I generally don't, I'm such a pragmatist and, like, you know, if you get an Oscar or an Emmy, like, your rate goes up.
Yeah.
You know, if you get an Eisner, your rate does not change.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. So I'm like, well, it's nice, you know? But I was pissed that Nicola and Jean did not get nominations. In my mind to worrying about them canceling each other out.
Yeah.
On the main ballot. It didn't occur to me that they wouldn't get nominated. And I was legitimately pissed. I wrote to DC to make sure that they had been submitted. and I was trying to, I was like, this is not sour grapes. This is just genuine, like, I'm very confused. But I mean, I guess it's just, there's a limited number of spots in every category, and it is what it is. But I mean, it's astonishing work from both of them.
Couldn't agree more. All three of them are such, it's funny you said before, densely, you know, there's so much information, both words and images in all three volumes. And that's what's great about this. I mean, it should be that kind of, you know, feast that you really want to sit down with this book and really pore over every panel. I mean, like you said, Phil started it, but truly, Gene and you, Nick, I mean, you guys, you know, continued. And it really is. It's a feast for the eyes and the brain as you're putting it all together.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Ben, I agree with you, unfortunately. Although, you know, I mean, the Eisners is where works are respected. He says the biggest and most successful films, TV shows based on, unfortunately, comic books as a medium still disrespected, treated like just funny books. Yeah, the Eisners take comics seriously, though. I think it's more what Kel said in terms of only so many slots, volume one of Historia acknowledged. Maybe we'll see. I don't know what the cutoff is, But given that the completed hardcover is in June.
Yeah, we'll get another bite for the collected, but I wanted them individually acknowledged because, you know, it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work. Yeah. And they killed it. And I don't know.
Kel, where, and I don't know if it's still too early to call, but I know in initial conversations about this, you planned for 9 issues.
Yeah.
So is that still on the table?
The last I heard, I had a conversation with Conroy about it, and we were talking about options for how we would, like, would we see, you know, like, how would the art work if we did 9? Would we have, like, Phil wants to do the first one and the last one.
Okay.
So he would do 1 and 9, and then, like, would we switch out volume to volume, or would we, like, ask Nicola and Jean if they wanted back in, or how would we handle it? And I don't think we settled on anything. I think it was like, yeah, talk to Nicola and Jean. I don't know, you know, like, but I haven't heard that it is, nobody has said, all right, you need to start scripting. And this is who you're scripting for, but nobody has said, oh, it's not happening either. Good. So I don't know. Wonderful. where
Do you think they're waiting on sales numbers for the collected edition?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe they are. That could well be. So buy the collected edition, you guys.
Yeah, please.
Everybody. Yeah.
It should be in every library. It should be. It's such a masterwork in terms of sort of reanalyzing the story.
Yeah, and that's, you know, Steve Lieber, and I agree with you. And I'm glad you're here, Steve. Also,
Stefan. Oh my gosh, Steve, it's embarrassing to me for Steve to hear me talk like this. Sorry, Steve. It's like your dad showing up.
No, it's not. Shut up. he can handle it. We've hung out. I know where Steve's brain is. The real prize is readers will still be losing their mind about how great the work is 30 years from now. Yeah, no kidding, man. I completely agree with that. And Stefan Sedgwick also here. Acknowledging how great this is as well.
Oh,
and
that means, and,
gentlemen, in your case, gentlemen, it's always great when creators pop in. And actually, Palmiotti was very sweet and said something nice about the two of you coming on, which was great. Yeah.
And we were in Paris with them, and they just took us under their wing and wings, and they were lovely, super lovely.
Oh, yeah. They're among the cutest couples out there. Absolutely. Jimmy and Amanda, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Is this true, Jerry? Gonna get library banned here in Texas?
Oh, God.
Oh, that's terrible. I hope not. But it's Texas, so, you know, whatever.
For what?
Because it's feminist? Because there's violence?
I'm sorry, guys. Yeah.
Not enough guns.
Yeah.
No, it's terrible.
I went to junior high school and college in Texas. But I went to junior high school and college in Austin, which is a sort of island in Texas.
Indeed. And yes, Jerry is assuming. I was surprised by that. Let's hope not, Jerry. Let's think positively, because this really, it's so great. Kel, what, without spoiling, because for people who haven't read it yet, act one of the 3 volumes ends at a great place that, if God forbid you weren't able to do all 9, this is a good place to stop for now. But without spoiling, can you? I know where your end point is. You've talked about that.
I've already said what the end point is.
Yes. So, and that is, it ends with Steve Trevor landing on Thermoscara. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, I don't want to, and if it is too spoilery, don't tell me. But yeah, where do you see Act Two going from where we are? Because God, I you tell me, Kel, because I don't want to spoil, but things are established at the end of Volume Three, and you know, it's like I said, it's a good place to stop. So well, I don't know how much you want to say.
Yeah. Three's been out since December, and I think we can spoil Three. I think
if
you haven't picked it up, you should. And I don't have a problem with that.
So yeah, I mean they are again. Are you cool into Nick?
Yeah, go for it. Absolutely.
All right. Well, yeah, you know, and again, I'll probably be clumsy as I describe it, but you know, the big war comes down. There are attacks by Hercules and Apollo, and the male, and certainly Zeus's wrath is felt as the Amazons, in his view, obviously, are defying male god law, I suppose. but it ends with, and it's really, I want to get into this in a second, but it ends with the birth of Diana.
Yeah.
You know, which is cool. And again, your endpoint is Steve showing up on Paradise Island. Right. So again, I don't know. Do you want to say where you're going in Act Two?
Well, at the end of Book Three, Hippolyta has been given the blessing of Diana, right? She's a mother, but she's also betrayed the Amazons, and so they have to live on this island.
Yes.
And she's been cast out of the community, and so she and this baby are on their own. And so, I mean, it kind of suggests where you have to go next.
Okay, sure.
Because we know that Hippolyta is going to become the queen of the Amazons, right? So
yeah,
she can't stay cast out.
Yeah.
So she's going to have to make good. And so we're going to have to figure out what that means. In the meantime, she's going to be raising this little girl. And, you know, all alone. So there's something there. On the island, there is, so the idea of the island was playing with the feminist notion of pretty prisons, right? So it's Paradise Island, but there's been work done about how, and this was especially true in the last century, but how women frequently have dominion in the home, but not outside of the home. And so there's in the 19th century, it was very, very much that way, where like women were only allowed this kind of freedom and to be the decision makers inside the home, and then outside of the home had to defer always to men. And so the home becomes this place of freedom, but also a place where you're trapped.
Absolutely.
And so that's the idea of Paradise Island here is, it's a pretty prison. It's a place where they have dominion. It's just them. They don't have to deal with men. But it's just them. And it's, they can't leave, you know? And even if you don't want to leave, the fact that you can't leave is a different thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so that was the notion we were playing with there. And there's just also the motherhood aspect of, so in this iteration, right, no Amazon who rebelled against the gods can leave the island. But Diana didn't rebel against the gods. So she's the only one who can leave. And if you think about being a mother and having those kind of conflicting desires, like the only thing that you want for your child is for them to be free to go out and live their best life. And the only thing that you want more than that is to protect them from everything that might hurt them. And you cannot possibly do both at the same time. And so I'm trying to talk about this without giving away exactly, but that's a big part of, that's actually a big part of three.
Okay.
But, that conflict of, I want her to go. She's the only one who can go. If she goes, it will kill me, you know?
Yeah.
And, anyway, but leaving off where we did, Apollo had asked to be the warden. So the other thing about Themyscira is that they're under his watchful eye. So the sun never sets there except for, I think it's one day a month when, Artemis has dominion. So they get one night. And so that's something else I want to play with, is like that feeling of being it's the idea of the pretty prison, right? Like, oh, everybody wants sunshine all the time, except we don't want sunshine all the time, you know?
Well, yeah, David actually was asking about that. We're arriving at the notion of night versus day in Themyscira, Paradise Island.
It started with pondering the Greek playing with what is masculine and what is feminine, and sort of my own confusion and wrestling with that, I so often. I agree, Jerry.
Jerry's Apollo is the worst, absolutely.
Yes. I so often bristle at that. And then I've also noticed that there's that what were masculine and feminine in ancient Greece are not always in modern interpretation. So like, for instance, so Artemis and Apollo, they're twins, male, female, light, dark, right?
Yep.
And she's wild and nature and dirty and messy and brambles, and he is order and math and reason and light and cleanliness. And in modern pop culture, the mom archetype has taken over all of like the woman. I love that drawing.
Yeah. Jesus.
I know. And so like it's always like in TV shows, right? It's always the man that's the messy one and the woman that's tidying up and keeping order and everything. Mm. I thought that was really interesting that is a subversion of what it used to be. And you know, when you link gender to biology, then there's other things about that are interesting in the sort of way that menstruating women have a connection to time that men don't have.
Sure, and, of course.
I don't know. There's just, it was, it grew out of that. It grew out of thinking about light and dark, and being watched in like male gaze, and the freedom of being under the cover of darkness and being wild, and sort of returning to ancient archetypes of femininity that were more dangerous. So that's what it came out of.
No, that's awesome. David wants to know, Nick, how different did it feel to design someone like Hippolyta this time around compared to your previous takes on her?
Well, I was kind of really working with what Phil and Jean had done before.
Certainly.
But then applying my own version of her, you know, I've drawn Hippolyta plenty of times and I feel like I know what she looks like, or, you know, I know what my version of her looks like. So she's very much that, but wearing, you know, this is her very early days. This is when she's, you know, not yet queen, and not yet sort of the island has yet to establish itself as a sort of refined working community. It's just been sort of, you know, on the fly camp up until this point. So it's really just sort of, you know, taking how I see Hippolyta, her body language, her physicality, her face, her nose, her hair, all of that kind of stuff, and then sort of saying, okay, this is what this is where Phil left her. This is where Jean left her. What are the elements that I can pull from? And, you know, Phil's issue sort of takes place over, you know, who knows how long that first, you know, two-thirds of the story is taking place over, because it's incredibly ephemeral and esoteric you know, at a completely different level. Where Jean's issue takes place over quite a long period of time, like the first few pages take place over a year or something. And my volume takes place over 48 hours, maybe. You know, it's really,
wow.
It's really quick. So we don't get a lot of costume changes because they're, you know, they are made aware of what is coming at the beginning of the issue. And what is coming in the morning. And they have one night of respite where they, you know, have to funeral right there dead and make their prayers, and Hippolyta become more and more sure of survival, you know, at all costs, before they have to go straight back into battle again. And it's during that second battle that she has her moment of being able to face the gods face to face. So really by the end of the second day, they're on the island. It happens fast. It happens real fast. So it really was a matter of, I can remember thinking that the Hippolyta face paint that Jean had designed, that was essentially Artemis's blessing of this, you know, random woman that's sought her out and is seeking out the Amazons in general. That was going to be so important to her identity as fighting for who they are. But it was really important to me that she didn't have it on at the beginning of the issue, that by this point, it wasn't at the beginning of the issue, they weren't fighting, even though they did go off and have raids. they were coming together as a community, and I wanted to sort of show that sort of lightness of spirit that was sort of starting to form in this sort of seventh tribe situation. And then when it came to battle, she was painted up and ready to go. But by the time Diana is born, Hippolyta is essentially sort of having a little bit of a baptism as she's sort of losing all faith. Everything's turned to shit. She's just like, I'm just going to go drown myself. Goodbye.
Right. Let's. I love this scene. I love everything about this scene.
It's really, really a beautiful, like when I was reading through the scripting of that scene, I couldn't help but cry. There is a particular moment in the exchange between Hera and Artemis that always sort of really struck a chord with me that I was just like, oh God, but this scene is too much. It's too much. And that moment really feels deeply loaded. But sort of Hippolyta gets to come out of the ocean reborn without her war paint, which she's had on for, you know, the bulk of the issue.
Absolutely.
And, you know, be a mother, you know, ready for a different kind of fight.
Yeah. Oh, and Kel, I love the idea that as opposed to the old original origin, that Diana was made from clay. And of course, clay is so important to Greek culture. It made sense. But I love this idea. And obviously, the metaphor is she is of Themyscira. She was made from the physical rock that they have been banished to. And it's that wonderful thing of, no, she really is from Themyscira, literally. So yeah, tell me, I mean, you know, obviously that's the choice. That's great. That's really great. And it was that, you know, tell me about coming up with that versus, you know, was there a man? Was it just a blessed piece of clay? Yeah, tell me about that choice.
Well, from the very beginning, I was really pissy about Zeus being made her father. It just bugged the shit out of me.
That was a new 52 sort of origin. That sort of rewrote what had come before. It was never the case before.
Yeah. And it was just this whole thing that was like, oh, it's a bridge too far to imagine that there wasn't a man involved. Like, oh no, we shoot beams from our eyes and shit, but but having a child without a man, like, whoa.
I want to see the mud fight between you and Azarello. Because no disrespect, Brian. Atta girl.
Same.
I love you
rolling
both.
Up my slaves, ready to go.
No, that's great. That's great. Go on.
And, like, no personal diss, but I hated it. And
a lot of people complained about Brian's run, and I was intrigued, but I see both. I don't mean to be middling by saying this, but I do. I see both sides. I get it. And especially truly, Kel, all three volumes. And even what you said about Hercules, you know, stealing Hera's, girdle and everything. Yeah. The girdle. And it's like, I mean, I read that back in fourth grade and I'm like, all right. You know, whatever. And now it's like, oh, fuck yeah, man. That is totally massive female diss.
Take off her belt.
Say it again.
You have to get the challenges, get close enough to her to take off her belt. Right? Yeah. Like the girdle is a belt.
Sure.
And it's not even like, it's not terribly coded, you know? And so, you know, it's just this whole like, subsuming of women. And so it was like, no, fuck you. She gets two moms.
Yeah.
So,
that's great.
She's born of Hippolyta and Hera. And then she has the best aunties in the universe.
Yeah.
So, Yeah. So just was like, no, fuck you. I get it. Why is that? Like, I don't understand it. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's all good, buddy. Mara wants to know, what are the gifts the goddesses gave to Diana in volume 3? Are they revealed later?
I don't know what we're talking about.
At the end of the issue, they're sort of lining up to give their blessing.
It's nothing. I'm sorry. I should make something up, but no, it's just intended to be. I mean, if you want to think of it that way, you would go back to. I mean, Artemis gives her name, right? So right. That's
absolutely.
Really, it's everything that they put in the primordial sludge in book one, which is, you know, what they have to give. So hold on, I'm pulling that up.
No, it's all good.
So let's see. That would be Aphrodite gives passion. With that comes, let's see, I have to choose the restless nature of the ocean. Demeter gives dreams and ideas. Artemis, courage and liberty. Hecate, fear and temperance. Athena, strength and cunning. And Hestia, the fire of life.
Yeah, it's like the Shazam anagram and what they represent. No, right. I understand that. Moira's like, yes, I was right. Fantastic. and she says three moms once Philippus starts training her. Sure.
Yeah, I mean,
that's later.
50 moms once we're all back on the island, you know?
Yeah.
I tend to think of it as like as aunties, like Hippolyta is really mom. Hera's sort of an absentee mom. and then
Philippus,
the best fucking aunties in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So.
And thousands of years to train her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love, as you guys say that and someone had asked in the chat about, how time passes, and it's kind of like that whole God thing of, you know, well, he created the earth in 6 days. And it's like, I love that line in Oh God that George Burns goes, yeah, when I was up, you know, when I woke up this morning, what's his face? The psychologist was still still in med school. Freud. He's like Sigmund Freud was still in high school when I woke or in grade school when I woke up this morning.
Yeah.
So yeah, our days are a little different. David wanted to know, and Nick, this might be I don't remember from volume one or volume two, but he's like he was curious why Ares and Zeus both have the same eyes. And they're yellow and they're black eyes with yellow pupils and stuff. Does that detail mean anything?
Generally, I was following Phil's designs.
Okay.
So I'm sure Phil has an essay on how on the why of everything, because he's that kind of thinker. You know, there was very little that was just like, let's put in that detail because it'll look cool. You know, he comes loaded with research and information and backup materials. And, it was quite a sort of dense package of, editorial sent me quite a big box worth of, you know, here's all of Phil's research material. I'm like, shit, how am I going to, you know, get my head around all of this? But, you know, by about halfway through the issue where I felt like I'd sort of drawn most of the Amazons in particular, you know, less so the gods, they sort of took their time to sort of present themselves in the story. But there was a point where I was just sort of like, okay, I feel like I've got a sense of all of these characters now. But it took a while because there was so much. It was so much. I've never worked on a job this sort of dense before. Which is, you know, part of the joy of a project like this, especially sort of the physical area, the space of which to work on, because the pages are so enormous, and the sort of real thought that you know, Kelly Sue was putting into the story, as well as all of the thought that Phil and Jean were adding along the way, meant that I had an incredibly sort of densely rich body of research from which to pull and be inspired by and be directed by. And so, you know, my desk was out of control for 18 months, as you know, because I couldn't let anything get too far away. Everything had to be sort of in reaching distance so I could sort of pull from it.
Once again, tons of back matter in all three volumes. Is there any, is all of this going to be included in the hardcover, all the different back matter?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And there's also the original pitch document.
Cool.
Is there, and I wrote a little introduction to it as well, and we redacted like a little bit of the, so you can see the
hold on, I'm gonna zoom in. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Books 2 and 3 are redacted a bit.
Yeah, so redacted.
Yeah. Keep you safe from spoilers.
That's great. McCoy wants to know, where did the decision to replace Hermes with Hecate in the pantheon that gifts Diana come in? Because there's a really interesting mythological element to both of those choices.
Just because I wanted it to be all the women.
Sure.
You know, and also Hecate's triple goddess, it's
Statistic.
She had to be there. She really had to be there.
Yeah.
But I have fun with Hermes. I think my favorite Hermes thing is that Zeus doesn't know what he's the god of. Zeus is like, wait, what are you the god of? Like, I know that you're a messenger, but wait, what?
Yeah.
So when he's trying to explain that, like, you know, in the beginning, when he's like, you know, everything has its purpose, and you know, and we all have dominion over these different things, and he's going through, and then he gets to Hermes and like, wait, what? Like,
and this one.
And I just thought that was, I don't know why I enjoyed that as much as I did, but I enjoyed it a lot because most people couldn't tell you, I think. Because we all know he's the messenger, but we don't know what his actual dominion is. By the way, it's trade.
And Hermes being sort of part of the group, that was purely a George Perez era specific, you know? Yeah. He was kind of the one that sort of gave us that story that we stuck with until the, you know, Zeus Daddy came along.
Yeah.
This is a sort of well-considered restructuring of that original idea.
Understood. No, and I it just bums me out that I never had the opportunity to really talk to George about his run, because it was so exciting when it was coming out. And again, I mean, this is where all of you from the art standpoint and maybe from the writing standpoint as well, a great place to start as far as where your own creativity took you, you know, certainly. So.
Oh, certainly for Phil and I, yeah.
Yeah.
That was our sort of starting point.
Yeah.
I had those books from the newsstand when I was a kid in Germany, you know?
Yeah, Jesus, absolutely. Yeah, that's true. Sounds I was good. Yeah. Kel's an army brat. So, yeah, she's around the world and everything. Absolutely.
Yeah. Air Force, but yeah.
Oh, excuse me.
No, that's okay. Military. I don't know. Military. I just corrected you for my dad in case he was going to, like, you know, appear like a Kool-Aid man. I was like, every time I say our family's Italian, my dad's like busts through the wall and he's like, Sicilian.
Like the Kool-Aid man.
Yeah. I know there's Italians, absolutely. They're very specific. And the Greeks are like that too. I'm from my people are from Tripoli and everything. So no, I get it. That's hilarious. Well, and Ramsey, I mean, I know the answer to this, but I'll throw it up there. Did Nicholas see any of what Phil and Jean did previously? And was there anything she liked that she wanted to add to her visuals, like an artist's continuity, or did she want a clean slate?
Well, working on a book like this, there's no such thing as a clean slate. You know, there has to be some continuity. By the time I was starting volume three, I'm pretty sure volume one was done. If not sort of completely colored, certainly all of Phil's part was done. And I think about maybe 70% of Jean's was done. I can't quite remember where Jean was up to. But so, you know, that certainly gave me a proper idea of what Phil was sort of germinating and you know, the direction that he was taking with his designs and his storytelling style. You know, the first two thirds of the book, I think, are all double page spreads. You know, they're all these enormous sort of, you know, grand scale storytelling. And it's not really until we reach Hippolyta in the sort of last part of the book that it sort of suddenly starts to read a bit more like a conventional comic, even though the format is different and the sort of panel number per page is, you know, completely different because, you know, we're working in a different, you know, on a different ratio, but also producing a monthly floppy is not at all the same as producing a Black Label book. Yeah. So, you know, you get to really consider the space and use it to its best advantage. And so, you know, I got a proper idea of what both Phil and Jean were doing. That sort of gave me some reassurance because they were so different. When I was first approached to be one of the artists on the series, it was for volume two, and it just, you know, timing-wise, it didn't work out. You know, it was like very interested, but it's not going to work. And part of me was relieved because I was like, I don't want to follow Phil. That's going to be a fucking nightmare. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Jean took the gig before he had seen what Phil did.
Jesus Christ. It's, I know, too much. Actually, because
I feel so bad.
And like, you know, I know what Phil's relationship to Wonder Woman and the Amazons and, you know, all of these characters are. I know his passion for it. I read his run back in the day. I know. And so for him to be coming back would have to mean something, not only a project significant enough to draw him back, but also the emotional sort of price you pay to work on something that you're that emotionally connected to is really overwhelming. You know, like when I did year one with Greg, we did a very sort of, I had decided because of the time that we were in and, you know, for a bunch of reasons that this is how I wanted to approach the art style. If we'd worked on the same story 2 years earlier, I might have chosen a different art style. But during that time, it was like, I want to do something that's a little more all ages appropriate, blah, 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 blah. Anyway.
Sure, sure.
regardless of the sort of finishes and the style of storytelling and the art that I wanted to do, it was still me getting what I had sort of defined down to my dream job, which was working on a Wonder Woman origin story with Greg Rucka. And it's like, how does that happen? But here we are. And then not necessarily really being able to enjoy the process, because it's like loving the process, but being overwhelmed by it. It's really hard to just sort of shut up and get the work done when you're that invested in it, because, you know, anyone who's in any way artistic or creative, what everybody else sees is what you show them, what you play them, what you know, is the end result. What they don't see is all the shit that goes into that. And they certainly don't see all of the mistakes that you can see in the finished product, all the things that you would change, all the things that you wish you did differently or whatever. And when you're working on a regular book or a monthly book, even if it's characters that I love, I know how to let it go. But when it came to Wonder Woman, it was like, I can't let this go. I don't know how to just shut up and do the job.
Okay, I'm stopping here because there's still another hour to go. And again, I just thought this was a good kind of natural break. So when we reconvene for part two, we'll come back to Nicola explaining her thinking about going back to Wonder Woman and needing that inspiration, as she was closing and saying about Greg Rucka and his inspiration and excitement about coming back to do Wonder Woman Year One. And Nicola then turns to explain her excitement about Historia in doing Volume 3. So that's where we'll start with Part 2, which is coming up in just a few minutes. I'm uploading it now as you're listening to this. So if it's not already on your feed, just check back in a bit, and I'm sure you'll see Part 2. So join us for Part 2, more of Kelly Sue DeConnick and Nicola Scott right here on Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2023. Stay safe, stay happy, stay healthy.